Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast. I'm now joined by Jane Forsyth and Katie Balls. So James, David Davis has been doing various studio tours this morning and yesterday, and we now hear that he wants a CETA triple plus deal. Can you explain to us what that means?
So CETA is the Canada-EU free trade agreement that does basically removes all tariffs on goods. But it doesn't do much on services. So lots of people have said, look, you can't use CETA as a model for the UK because the UK needs its service industries. The idea of CETA triple plus is that it is CETA plus services, CETA plus aviation, financial services and data. And the idea is that that would get you to an economically good deal, but also one that preserves the UK's freedom of action in that. Because crucially, in the EU CETA deal, although they're basically all trying to ensure that products are safe and all that kind of thing, they're allowed to do it in different ways. So you don't have to have exactly the same regulation. You just have to have regulation that gets you to the same place. While as, if you were a member of the European Economic Area, that would be having exactly the same harmonised regulations with the EU. So you have to have exactly the same regulations to deliver exactly the same point.
And are the rest of the members of the cabinet on board with this CETA plus?
Ahead of this meeting of the kind of Brexit inner cabinet, we know that Philip Hammond, Amber Rudd and Greg Clark all favour some version of kind of EEA minus, possibly now EEA double minus. Then on the other side, you've got Michael Gove, Boris Johnson, Liam Fox, David Davis, who all favour kind of CETA with lots of pluses. And interestingly, the new Defence Secretary, Gavin Williamson, who also sits in this inner Brexit cabinet, the divergers in the cabinet are convinced that he too is more Canadian than Norwegian.
Kate, is there actually any reality of us getting this CETA triple plus?
I think lots of people like the CETA triple plus deal in theory because it sounds quite appealing. Obviously, Britain, in terms of the services, it's like 80% of the economy, services in Britain. And if you had a straight Canada deal, then it'd be really bad for services. So if you go plus plus plus, you kind of fix that. But the problem is, as of all of these deals, even the EEA minus, which is basically being a bit like Norway but without the freedom of movement, you wonder what you can actually get Brussels to agree to, because they're very strict that, you know, you can't be a member, you know, the single market unless you have freedom of movement, which means that one looks difficult. And with the free trade deal, they also don't want to give Britain such a good deal that it looks like cherry picking, because then they think it would encourage others to do that, and they want to show that, you know, life is best when you are a member of the EU. And on top of that, at the moment, you have the situation which we've seen David Davis doing, where yesterday, we've just got to phase one of these talks, and yesterday he's kind of suggested on the Andrew Marr show that perhaps Britain wouldn't actually need to, you know, do all the things they'd said if they don't actually complete the next stage of the deal. So lots of the commitments on the things like not having a hard border maybe weren't, you know, as committed as some people think, which has spooked the Irish government slightly. And EU officials, before you even have proper progress, which is agreed at the end of the week. So I think there's so many hurdles to get through before you even work out if we're going CETA plus plus, EEA minus, or neither of the two.
Yeah, I think the big showdown is this, is that Barnier, when the talks moved to trade, Barnier has basically said his opening negotiating position is you can either be Canada or you can be Norway, right? Where, you know, either of those deals is on the table, but don't think you can get a special, unique British deal. What the British government hopes to do is to leverage not just the trade surplus that the EU has with the UK, but more importantly, other things such as the UK security commitment to Europe and the like, to try and basically get the Europeans to admit that there is something in between Canada and Norway that you could get to, that, you know, that there is somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic.
British neutral. There is an
ideal agreement.
Do we have any sense of what Labour's position is on all of this at this point?
Well, Labour's position is ever shifting on Brexit. And I think we saw a further move towards kind of soft Brexit from Keir Starmer, where he basically, I thought on the Andrew Marr show, made quite clear that Labour was prepared for Britain to be a rule taker if that's what it took to maintain as frictionless access as possible to the single market and the customs union. Also, Labour keep talking about how they want easy movement, not free movement. And I think the kind of big question on that is, what counts? What would move it from being free movement to easy movement? Is it a notional emergency break, or is it, as some people on the Labour side certainly say in private, is it just some kind of EU-wide reform along the lines that Emmanuel Macron was talking about posted workers and all that stuff, which you could say, ah, oh, well, we've dealt with the problem of undercutting, social undercutting, so now we're happy to accept this.
There's also been more Tory melodrama with this showdown between Gavin Williamson and Philip Hammond. Do we know what happened there?
Well, this has been a row that's been simmering for, you know, over a week now, which is basically Gavin Williamson trying to get... Initially, it seemed that what Gavin Williamson wanted to do was get more money for his department and stop cuts from going through. Since then, he's things have escalated somewhat. So we had Philip Hammond being banned from using RAF planes until they he settled his bill. That bill has now been settled. But over the weekend, Rhea brought the news that they almost came to blows, the pair of them, in Parliament last week over their ongoing feud. And the Defence Secretary and the Chancellor had to be separated and then marched into the Prime Minister's office for a showdown, which obviously, given, you know, these high offices of state, isn't quite the becoming behaviour you would expect. But it is interesting, given that this is, again, Gavin Williamson, who has been really making a name for himself in the past few days and is willing, obviously, to go very far to try and get what he wants from Hammond. And perhaps he's realised that Hammond isn't such a popular figure, so it doesn't damage him that much to really go for him.
It's interesting. He's taken, in his first 6 weeks in the job or so as Defence Secretary, he's taken three positions that align him very much with the Tory membership. He is saying he wants more money spent on defence, always popular in Tory circles. He went way further than the Home Secretary in basically saying that we should use British drones to kill every Brit who's gone to go and fight with Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. And as we were discussing earlier, he's also siding with the kind of people in the cabinet who want the UK to diverge from the EU. Now,
and he's also posed with animals, which is, a real vote winner usually.
Exactly. Now, the speed with which he is moving is making lots of people think not only that he's got leadership ambitions, but that he, who was kind of chief whip before he was Defence Secretary, and so therefore in the Downing Street inner circle, he is working on the assumption that Theresa May will leave sooner rather than later. Because otherwise, you know, why pick fights with two of the most senior members of a cabinet within the first 6 weeks of getting the job? You know, most people would get their feet under the desk, get familiar with things, and then pick their arguments. The speed with which he is moving does suggest that he thinks that not only that he's a young man in a hurry, but that he thinks there isn't much time.
It seems a fairly risky strategy. Do you think he is a possible leader of the Tory party?
I think that the Tory leadership is... Where he is right is that the Tory leadership is so unpredictable right now that you can't tell. And what he is trying to do is he is trying to kind of establish... He wants to essentially represent a particular strand of conservatism that thinks that the route to the majority doesn't lie in winning back Battersea or Oxford West and Abingdon, but runs more through the Midlands and the North in more traditionally working-class communities. And if you look at all the positions he's taking, they kind of line him up with opinion in those areas. The voters who are kind of more worried about security than other things.
And Katie, finally, we might be hearing the results of this inquiry into Damian Green later today, perhaps. Do we know what's going to happen there?
Yeah, I mean, that might be optimistic given all the delays so far, but there is apparently good reason to believe that Theresa May will be handed the conclusion of this investigation this week, and Theresa May will take action before she heads off on her Christmas holiday. That action may be inaction. It may be that she decides that, you know, to keep Damian Green on in that role. But there is a feeling that this is now, after several weeks, going to come to an end. And I think what is important here is, because Damian Green's job is so integral, that Secretary of State job, they just really want to get to the point where there's no longer this limbo, where he is too distracted with the investigation to be able to focus on that, as we saw last week with the DUP shenanigans. And if he does need to go, to get someone up who can get fully briefed very quickly.
I think there is also a fascinating element here, which is, we were just talking about that Brexit inner cabinet and the split in it. Damian Green is obviously a member of that. So if you take him out of that cabinet, you do shift the balance. So this is why all this kind of all adds up to the whole picture of a government and what will happen next.
And does it partly explain Gavin Williamson's behaviour, knowing that Damian Green has been slightly weakened by all of this?
I think he has made the calculation. I think, not to kind of get dragged back into EA minus and CETA plus, which is...
Perish the thought.
If you look at the... there is a kind of interesting thing, which is if you look at the briefing from those close to Philip Hammond on Saturday, he said Philip Hammond accepts that the UK can't just copy EU rules in which it's had no say in making them. But he was then going to challenge the seat of the Canadians in the cabinet to set out what EU regulations that they would wish to change straight away. I mean, this is slightly looking at things backwards, because if the UK isn't going to copy all EU rules and regulations, within a few years, the UK will have diverged from the EU. And the EU in any trade deal where the UK doesn't commit to simply copy EU rules, it's going to say, well, if you're not going to simply copy our rules, we're going to treat you as if you're Canada, even if you're behaving as if you're Norway.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And just a reminder of our special Christmas offer, you can get an annual subscription to The Spectator for £99. It normally costs £135. And we'll even throw in a bottle of Berry Brothers champagne.
It's our Christmas triple plus offer.
Exactly. We're putting the Moleskine offer on hold for the moment, so no moles will be harmed this Christmas. To get this offer, just go to spectator.co.uk/Christmas podcast offer.